Welcome to the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here at Studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, the 3rd of August, 2017. I'd like to invite you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, email addresses, all that stuff you need to take action. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team will be having a restoration this Saturday, August 5th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Seabright Beach in Santa Cruz. That's part of Twin Lakes State Beach. What a wonderful way to spend an early summer morning doing coastal restoration at this sweet California State Beach in Santa Cruz on the east side of the San Lorenzo River where it empties into the Pacific Ocean. Come join us and see how this place has been transformed into a coastal paradise with the help of dedicated neighborhood stewards. The Habitat Restoration Project at Seabright State Beach has been ongoing for about 3 years now. The project is led by Groundswell Coastal Ecology in partnership with California State Parks. Volunteers have pulled out tons of non-native vegetation, primarily ice plant, and planted thousands of natives. These plants are coastal strand and coastal scrub species propagated from locally collected seeds. The plants have grown rapidly into a gorgeous habitat with additional rewards of steady increase in pollinators and birds. We have fully restored about half the beach now and are working hard on the second half. This Saturday we will be removing ice plant along the dunes on the east side of the beach, possibly the coastal bluff. Afterwards, consider taking a stroll or a dip at the beach and feel good that you helped out at this special spot. Linda says, see you there. Directions to Seabright Beach. The meeting spot is the entrance to Seabright Beach, part of Twin Lakes State Beach, on the west side of the Yacht Harbor. At the intersection of Highway 17 ending in Santa Cruz, take Ocean Street down till it ends. Take a left, and you have the river on your right and the beach boardwalk beyond that. Drive up the hill, and shortly after passing the train trestle, make a quick right-hand turn. Follow this down towards the ocean. It will curve to the left and start going downhill right across from the Santa Cruz City Museum of Natural History, where the large gray whale sculpture is present. At the bottom of the hill is the entrance to Seabright Beach at the corner of Mott Avenue and East Cliff Drive, where we'll meet up. Seabright Beach has no parking lot, but you can park anywhere in the neighborhood streets that there is not a no parking sign or a red curb. There's no permit parking in this neighborhood. Once again, that's Seabright Beach State Park. Seabright Beach as part of Twin Lakes State Park from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. this Saturday, August 5th. If you'd like more information, please contact the program leader, Linda. And I don't have her. Oh, here it is. Linda, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or email her at redwoodrn, REDWDRN, at packbell.net. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking information related to Lassex lupin. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking information relevant to a proposal to list the Lassex lupin, Lupinus constantii, as an endangered species. There are two known populations of the Lassex lupine, both within Six Rivers National Forest in the northern part of California. The largest population occurs on Mount Lassex. Within Mount Lassex Wilderness in Humboldt County, a smaller population occurs on Red Lassex, which is in Trinity County, and outside the Mount Lassex Wilderness. On July 2016, a petition to formally list Lassex lupin as endangered under the California Endangered Species Act was submitted to the California Fish and Game Commission. The listing petition described a variety of threats to the survival of the Lassex lupin, including forest encroachment, small mammal seed predation, fire, climate changes, and off-road vehicles. The commission followed CDFW's recommendation and voted to advance the species to candidacy on February 8th. The commission published findings of this decision on February 24th, triggering a 12-month period during which CDFW will conduct a status review to inform the commission's decision on whether to list the species. please visit native-plants@wildlife.ca.gov. That's native-plants@wildlife.ca.gov. In your email, please include Lassix lupin in the subject heading. Comments received by September 8th will be evaluated as part of the commission proceedings. Standing your ground, defending your right. Lessons from the field with the buffalo from the Buffalo Field Campaign. Volunteers are an integral part of the Buffalo Field Campaign, a cornerstone of our field work. The personal experience of being on the landscape with the buffalo offers many learning opportunities. Volunteers patrol the buffalo's habitat, learn the buffalo's distinct migration and behaviors, and directly experience the buffalo's plight. Like the mother buffalo defending her newborn calf from harassment by livestock agents, sometimes you must stand your ground, turn your horns, and defend your right to be where you are. Recently, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals delivered a victory for Anthony Reed, a Buffalo Field Campaign volunteer who was cited and arrested by a Gallatin County Sheriff's deputy during a buffalo hazing operation along the Madison River and Highway 191. The unanimous appeals court ruling clears the way for Reed's case to proceed against Gallatin County Sheriff's Office Doug Lawrence and Brian Gutkin for violating Reed's First and Fourth Amendment rights and related Montana constitutional rights, and for failing to train officers on Montana's obstruction statute. This opinion basically sets in stone that Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers have First Amendment rights to observe hazing operations, and volunteers engaged in this activity cannot be falsely arrested for obstruction if they are not interfering with the haze, says attorney Rebecca K. Smith. It can be relied upon in future cases to protect the rights of Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers, as well as the rights of activists all over the country who are trying to peacefully observe and document government operations. Reed's arrest on May 23rd of 2012 occurred shortly after Buffalo Field Campaign volunteer evidence was used in another case brought by the Alliance for the Wild Rockies and attorney Rebecca K. Smith, who secured a federal judicial restraining order on May 14th of 2012, temporarily prohibiting the Montana Department of Livestock from flying helicopters in the agency's buffalo hazing operations. Attorney Rebecca K. Smith successfully argued for the Gallatin County prosecutor to drop the officer's citation, and the court dismissed Reed's charges. Smith and the Public Interest Defense Center then filed Reed's constitutional suit after years of multiple Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers being arrested and cited for attempting to witness and document Department of Livestock-led operation that harassed migratory buffalo on national forest habitat in Montana. Attorney Tim Beckold of Beckold Law Firm assisted in Reed's trial. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found that Gallatin County Deputy Sheriff Doug Lawrence did not have probable cause to arrest Reed and threaten him with jail for attempting to observe a government-led hazing operation forcing buffalo and their newborn calves from national forest lands. The three-judge panel agreed with Reed that he was not obstructing the hazing operation by parking on a public road overlooking the Madison River. The court wrote that a public road is a quintessential public forum, and in being there, Reed was engaged in a First Amendment-protected activity of observing a government operation. The Ninth Circuit Court judges removed U.S. District Court Judge Sam E. Haddon from the case and reversed his decision, finding he had committed error in dismissing Reed's First Amendment and related states' claims based on lack of notice, thus denying him an opportunity to present evidence and improperly relied on a pre-written court order to dismiss Reed's claim without the proper motion being filed with the court, improperly decided factual questions and disputes reserved for the jury, such as inexplicably applying the presumption that the Gallatin County Sheriff obeyed the law, abused his discretion for excluding Reed's expert testimony on police practices and the failure to train officers. The appeals court also found Reed presented evidence sufficient for a jury to conclude Deputy Lawrence unreasonably placed restrictions on and desired to chill Reed's constitutionally protected activity and future activity, and the deputy's threat to take Reed to jail was retaliatory. The court wrote a jury could reasonably infer that Deputy Lawrence's safety justification was pretextual, and in fact he sought to prevent the Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers from observing the haze. While the appeals court ruling vindicated Reed's constitutional rights, he will have to seek a new trial to be decided by a fair and impartial jury before a new judge, With this administration stripping protections from wildlife and people, it's more important than ever to support the people who are protecting the future, says Anthony Reed. The animals, the earth, the people all need more defenders, and together we can win. Please get involved. Volunteer, contribute what you can. The buffalo needs your help. ALF and ELF actions in defense of Arauco forest in Chile. In this story from Contra Info, as translated and found on the Earth First Journal. As action sells, we believe that the distribution of propaganda is necessary in cities, towns, and forests wherever we are. In this case, we speak of propaganda against those who exploit the land, propaganda against the devastation that carries with it the monocrop plantations of pine and eucalyptus. Do we dry out the land or exploit it? Neither. We position ourselves as defenders of the native forests and against those usurpers. Meanwhile, the murderous assassins continuing cutting off animals in their slaughterhouses with their unscrupulous hands and distributing the meat to the different butchers and localities around the world. The slaughterhouse is the same as a gigantic meat industry. They are our enemies. We have no respect for these disgusting beings, so we say that animals are not alone. In conclusion, as cells of the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front, we conducted the following direct actions on July 31st of 2017. Left messages on boards in native forests in defense of the earth and against the exploitation of the same, also against hunters. Set off a noise bomb in a truck of the Arauco Forest Company. Set off another noise bomb in the front of the main access of the house and the rear access, off the viaducts and roads, no to the IRSA plan. Action for the animals and the earth, Animal Liberation Front, Earth Liberation Front. And a study has linked most Amazon deforestation to 128 slaughterhouses. In this story by Eduardo Perguerrer, as translated by Bruno Morales, of Our World and found on the Earth First Newswire. Satellites are mechanical reporters of the Amazon deforestation process. By documenting the degradation gaps created by clear-cutting process over the years, they deliver the verdict. Two-thirds of Amazon's deforested area has been turned into pastures. From the ground, the cattle count reveals the Amazon is home to more cattle than people. By 2016, the region's cattle numbers amounted to 85 million head of cattle compared to a population of 25 million humans, more than three cows per person. In the city of São Félix de Xingu, which contains the largest herd in Brazil, this proportion reaches 18 cows per person. The Amazon covers 61% of the nation's territory and harbors 40% of the national herd. Cattle are kept on about 400,000 farms and ranches there, raising in size from a few to tens of thousands of hectares. So it was that when the NGO, Amazon, furnished a new and detailed survey on the region's slaughterhouses, they received a major surprise, finding that a small number, just 128 active slaughterhouses belonging to 99 companies, are responsible for 93% of the annual slaughter of cattle in Brazil, close to 12 million head. The fact that slaughterhouses represent a bottleneck in the livestock breeding chain was already known, but Amazon's survey breaks new ground because it clearly reveals the geography of livestock production in the Brazilian Amazon, documents the area of influence, the amount of pasture required to fulfill the supply demands of each of the 128 slaughterhouses. To put things in perspective, fulfilling the annual processing capacity of a single large meat processing plant requires almost 600,000 hectares, or 2,317 square miles of pasture, an area more than seven times larger than New York City. The set of slaughterhouses analyzed in the study, operating at full capacity, would require a pasture area of 68 million hectares, or 262,560 square miles, roughly the size of Texas. Importantly, this amount exceeds the total pasture area available in the region today, indicating that in the near future, cattle ranching will generate even more Amazon deforestation. And Sea Shepherd discovers that wild fish are trapped in British Columbia's salmon farm pens. 1 week after launching their new wild salmon defense campaign, Operation Virus Hunter 2, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is already making alarming discoveries of fish trapped in farmed salmon pens. On August 2nd, the nonprofit organization's research vessel, the RV Martin Sheen, was sailing in British Columbia's Nodalis Channel, left by renowned Canadian biologist Alexandra Morton. It is on a research mission that includes stopping at various salmon farms along the coast to conduct audits for disease and other factors. Hereditary Chief Joe Quacksister of the Quilach Nation was also on board the RV Martin Sheen to welcome the Sea Shepherd crew and its researchers in his Discovery Islands territory. The group stopped at Marine Harvest Sonora Point Ocean Pen Atlantic Salmon Farm to collect samples in public waters in the area. During the stop at Sonora Point, Quacksister spotted what appeared to be small baby wild fish inside a couple of Marine Harvest salmon pens. The pens had already been harvested and emptied of any farmed salmon. When Quacksister inquired as to what kind of fish were inside those pens, one Marine Harvest salmon farm worker told the chief that there were no fish in the pen. This was a cause for concern as salmon farms are not only a breeding ground for disease and parasites, which spread to the surrounding waters, but they also trap wild fish. Wild fish in open net salmon farms cause a chain reaction throughout the surrounding ecosystem, affecting all who depend on wild fish for survival. According to its website, Norwegian-based Marine Harvest bills itself as one of the largest seafood companies in the world, as well as the largest producer of Atlantic salmon. However, Marine Harvest has also been found guilty in a provincial court of British Columbia for possession of wild herring back in 2012. Quacksister attempted to notify the Department of Fisheries and Oceans to have them come out to the salmon farm and investigate, but no representatives appeared. To collect hard evidence of what he believed was wild fish trapped in salmon pens, Quacksister used a GoPro waterproof camera and boarded the Marine Harvest salmon farm. His suspicions were confirmed when his footage revealed thousands of wild fish, including herring and capelin, trapped in the half meter of the surface where they could not escape the sun and were unable to feed. The pens where the wild fish were trapped had been harvested, all the farm salmon had been removed, and the nets largely pulled up. It is unclear why Marine Harvest did not release the wild fish. And Poland vows to continue logging in Białowieża Forest despite a court ban. Poland will keep logging in the ancient forest of Białowieża despite an order from the European Union's top court to halt the practice, the country's environment minister has said. The Court of Justice in the European Union last week ordered Poland to suspend logging operations pending a final judgment on its dispute with the European Union. The environment minister, Jan Suzako, said on Monday that operations would continue and the government was preparing a response to the court to be sent out tomorrow. Polish television station TVN24 showed footage of machines felling trees in the Białowieża Forest, which had been listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Greenpeace's Polish spokesman said the felling is continuing even if it is at a lower intensity. On Saturday, a cameraman trying to establish if felling operations were continuing was assaulted by employees of one of the logging companies, an incident that was condemned on Monday by the authorities. The EU took Poland to court on July 13th, arguing that the Białowieża operations were destroying a forest that boasts unique plant and animal life, including the continent's largest mammal, the European bison. The Polish government said it had authorized the logging, which began in May of last year, to contain damage caused by spruce bark beetle infestations and to fight the risk of forest fires. But scientists, ecologists, and the European Union have protested, and activists allege the logging is a cover for commercial cutting of protected old-growth forests. The forest, which straddles Poland's eastern border with Belarus, includes one of the largest surviving parts of the primeval forest that covered European plain 10,000 years ago. The UNESCO Committee overseeing the World Heritage Sites project has called in the European Union on calling Poland to halt its logging operations. and longer, fiercer fire seasons are the new normal with climate change, in this story by Georgina Gustin of Inside Climate News. Firefighters in the West are starting to see it every year, an earlier start to the fire season, and millions of acres of forest and range burned or ablaze as summer just begins to heat up. At least 60 large blazes are currently devouring parts of the West, threatening to make 2017 a record-breaking wildfire year, and adding to the 3.4 million acres already burned this year. As early as April, wildfires have scorched more than 2 million acres in the United States, nearly the average consumed in an entire fire season during the 1980s. At least 20 new large fires have ignited in the West in the last few days, forcing thousands of people from their homes. And that's not to mention 12 large fires in British Columbia, which is spreading smoke across the Pacific Northwest, including the towns of Seattle and Portland. All the wildfires out West at the moment, it's exploding, said Kevin Trenberth, a climate scientist at the Climate Analysis Section of the National Center for Atmospheric Research. It was the same last July with fires all over the way up to Alaska. Forest ecologists and climate scientists say this is the new normal, what the fire historian Stephen Pine has called the pyroscene, and recent research has solidly linked it to human activity. A study last year found that human-caused climate change had nearly doubled the amount of forest burned in the West since 1984. Dry periods are getting drier. The risk of wildfire is greater as a result of climate change, Trenberth said. There's a tremendous amount of fuel out there waiting for the right conditions. Whatever conditions exist, they're always exacerbated by climate change. There's always that heat variable, the increased risk. And Oceana has filed suit challenging a federal failure to protect endangered sea turtles, whales, dolphins, and from California's deadly swordfish drift nets. On July 12, 2017, Oceana filed a lawsuit challenging the Secretary of Commerce and National Marine Fisheries Service decision to back out of a proposed rule establishing limits, so-called hard caps, on the injury and death of endangered whales and sea turtles entangled in California-based swordfish drift net fisheries. The surprise retraction is a blow to state and federal fishery management on the Pacific Fishery Management Council, who voted to recommend the rule. State leaders who have been working to clean up California's dirty drift net in fishery, and tens of thousands of people who supported the action. What's worse is that the 20 active drift net boats now have a green light to continue to kill dolphins, sea lions, whales, turtles, sharks, and other animals as bycatch without any limit or consequence. The Pacific off California is referred to by some as the Blue Serengeti because of its exceptionally rich and productive ocean ecosystems and is a migratory destination for massive herds of ocean animals that travel here to feed. Yet in the heart of this wildlife hotspot, fishermen pursue swordfish at night using mild long nets that are nearly 200 feet deep. These drift nets are inherently unselective and have a long track record of entangling and killing whales, dolphins, sea lions, turtles, and non-target fish, including rare sharks, billfish, and rays. And endangered orcas are losing their unborn babies because they're starving, a study finds. A unique group of killer whales is miscarrying at an astronomical rate, and it's because humans have wiped out most of their food supply. A recent study in the journal PLOS One found as high as 69% of southern resident killer whale pregnancies end in failure. These famous whales, which frequent the Salish Sea off of Seattle and Vancouver, rely on Chinook salmon for their lion's share of their diet. Once abundant, Chinook are now rare, and the whales are going hungry. The study is the first to demonstrate a clear link between orca miscarriages and poor nutrition brought on by the scarcity of their main prey. Scientists at the University of Washington collected orca feces between 2008 and 2014 to measure hormones that regulate hunger, stress, and reproduction. DNA profiling let them track the stages of pregnancy for individual orcas and figure out when a female became pregnant and at what point she lost her baby. Lead author Samuel Wasser said that for mammals, spontaneous abortion becomes increasingly rare as pregnancy progresses, but this is not the case for the southern resident orcas. Out of the 69% that aborted, about a third of those were in late pregnancy, Wasser said. That's a period that's extremely costly to females. This is a pretty serious problem. Past explanations for Southern resident Arco's skyrocketing abortion rate have included stress from dozens of whale-watching boats that encircle the orcas from tourist seasons, as well as poisoning from industrial chemicals. Wasser's team found no correlation between ship traffic and miscarriage, but it was a different story for toxins. Persistent pollutants like DDT and flame retardants get into the water and are passed up the food chain, where they're eventually locked away in the orca's blubber. Well-fed whales have little to fear, but starving southern resident orcas must burn their fat stores to survive. Wasser found that burning blubber releases the stored toxins and drives up the miscarriage rates. And scientists rediscover a Venezuelan bird not seen in 60 years. Feared extinct, the Tichira antpitta has been found in remote Andean region. In this story by Jennifer Howard of the American Bird Conservancy. An international team of researchers has solved one of South America's great bird mysteries. Working deep in the mountainous forests of western Venezuela, they have rediscovered the Tichira antpitta, a plump brown bird species not seen since it was first recorded in the 1950s. The 7.5-inch-long bird had not been spotted since 1955 or 6 when ornithologists first recorded and described it. The International Union for Conservation of Nature lists the species as critically endangered, and many feared it was lost for good. Last year, scientists of the Red Siskin Initiative and a conservation partnership between the Smithsonian and several scientific organizations in Venezuela organized a team to go in search of the antpitta. The team was... And that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can listen to a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. 101.3 FM and freakradio.org online. There are other radio stations around the United States that rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Please check your local community radio station for the day and time of those broadcasts. If you don't find it, please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to carry the Earth First Update. It is free to download and broadcast. It can be found at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4.all.net, where you can download or listen to this or any previous Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.